cliffcentral.com.
What's happening, Peshitta?
Good, how are you?
Good. Good. I was saying to my buddy, it was so cold this morning, and we drove in. She and I drove in at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And there was, I think it was three runners.
They are coming out now, you know.
Yeah. There was this lull, this two-week period where they either died. Now they're resurrecting like phoenixes.
Yeah. Now they're back.
These people were all wearing shorts.
Wow.
It was... I saw on the thermometer in my car, it was 3 degrees.
Mm.
Now, that's just ridiculous, to wear shorts at 3 degrees. Three skinny old white people running along Vessels Road.
They get hot while running.
Yeah, but I mean, shorts, really?
Yes.
You think it's the way to go? Wonder if that isn't bound to make you more sick, because your body's so busy trying to regulate the temperature. I don't know. I'm not a doctor. But we have debunked the idea that just being cold leads to you getting a cold. Right? That one's gone out of the window. That's an old wives' tale.
Yeah.
Justice Malala joins us in the next few minutes. You managed to wake him, Flax?
I'm trying to.
Justice having a rough day.
I'm trying to think, is he sleeping or is he in the shower?
Huh. When you get hold of him, let us know. In the meantime, let me tell you about the Lurys, which happen in Deben this year. A debut for the Lurys Creative Week this year. Masterclasses. We heard about this yesterday from Neo Mashiho, right? He told us about the masterclasses, so let me tell you what's going on there. The masterclasses are taking place on Thursday, the 18th of August at Tsokosan Elangeni Hotel, presented by Donovan Goliath, Accenture, Google, and Mike Shalit for IAS. The masterclasses are interactive sessions designed to inspire and to educate. Book your seat at lurys.com. That's lurys.com. You got it?
One more time.
Lurys.com.
Okay.
lurys.com. Are you happy with that?
Yes, that's good.
Thank goodness. All right, so that's Creative Week at the Lurys. And if you want to know more, you can go to that website to find out everything you need to know. The big ceremony takes place next weekend. In Durban, and that's going to be one that we will report back on the Monday when we get back here. I've never been to the Lurys. Ben, you have.
I went once, and that was enough.
Yeah, because you are antisocial, like I am, but you are not into the parties.
No, Gareth, I used to party with the best of them.
You got it out of your system.
That was my
life.
It was, for me, it's just so forced. I don't know if it's maybe changed. But it's like advertising is such a hard industry. You really do get whipped like in Ben-Hur. And then you get this like this false carrot of the Lurys. Like, oh, it's going to be so great. We get so hammered. And then you get so obliterated for 2 days. And then you just go back to getting whipped.
Yeah, it's tough. It's a tough business.
So, you know, like if you like that life, it's a life.
Don't forget, at the end of this month, we launch touchcentral.fm.
Ooh-hoo.
If you haven't already gone to that website to register, touchcentral.fm, then you can go and have a look. This show, in its entirety, will be hosted on touchcentral.fm. Which means that if you... and we still aren't sure how exactly this is all going to come together, but trust me, it's going to. We're going to be able to stream it free to your phone, which will change everything. So we don't have all those people who complain, oh, but I can't afford the data. We're going to make it happen.
17 days, 22 hours, 51 minutes, and 21 seconds.
Even if I have to pay for it myself. I don't know out of where, but I'm going to find a way. Let's go to Justice Malala now. It's time for a burning platform update with the man who's been so busy over the last few weeks that it would be completely understandable if he decided to take this morning off, but we are just not slackers and neither is Justice.
Burning platform, fired up by Nando's on cliffcentral.com.
So, it's time for a little update. Obviously, the elections this time last week, we were still busy counting the results for the first day after the elections themselves. And now we have a much clearer picture of what the electorate wanted. Justice Malala, good morning to you, sir.
Good morning, good morning. How are you guys?
Good, very, very good. So, Justice, there's only a few things to talk about today, and I know that you've got a busy schedule today, as you have had for the last few weeks, but there must be a closer, clearer, more easy-to-figure-out pattern coming from the coalition discussions. Do we have any idea, or is it all talk and smoke and mirrors at the moment? We've heard the DA saying that they will not ally themselves with the ANC in any municipality. We've heard the EFF saying similar things. What's the real state of coalition politics in South Africa?
Oh, you know, smoke and mirrors just says it perfectly, girls. Because what you're seeing now is people, they walk into a room, and they walk out and they say one thing, but then they walk back into the room to do more stuff together. So at the moment, there's been meetings going on in Bramfontein between the ANC and the EFF. There's meetings in Tshwane. There's meetings. There's been apparently some meetings taking place in Cape Town. We don't really know. We know that the EFF, the UDM, COPE, got together and issued a long statement. And they issued a long set of demands on land, which is a national policy issue, not a local policy issue. But basically what they're doing is saying, we are in pole position here. We can dictate to the two big guys what you want. So we're going to put into the basket stuff like land redistribution, stuff that actually if you want to do and do properly, you've got to win at national level to get where you want. But they're thinking there's a gap and we can maybe exploit it.
So in other words, this is a distraction.
This is, in a way, it's how far can I take my advantage? How desperate are the other guys to be in power? So how desperate is the ANC to be in power? Is it prepared, for example, to say, okay, we'll have the conversation with Jacob Zuma when we meet and the ANC National Executive Committee is meeting today from today until Sunday. And so we need to take the gap and put it on the table that, look, we can still build coalitions and run governments in Tshwane, Joburg, Ekurhuleni, if Brother Jacob leaves. So they're putting that on the table. They're putting the issue of land on the table. They're saying, maybe we could even run the city of Tshwane if we let you run the city of Joburg, which is something we discussed even before the election with the EFF putting some of that sort of thing on the table. So there are big demands, particularly from the EFF. And I think what's happening now is the ANC saying, in fact, I know I've spoken to one person who says, you know what, the EFF is now, they want to break the ANC, they want to destroy the ANC, and that's why they're putting such high demands, because if they do, they're in charge with their 8% of the national stake, and the ANC is no longer in charge. And so from the ANC side, I think there is a sense that, you know what, let them do whatever they want to do, we'll see at the next election. On the DA side, interestingly, there seems to be a sense that, look, let's talk. There's been some indications that the DA is prepared to give up, I think it's Thaba Zimbi and another municipality, smaller one, and essentially say to the guys in those towns that the EFF will run them, right. And the EFF will get some what you call MMC position. So it's like being a cabinet minister in your municipality, in your metro. And so they get one or two of those, and it would work. But I think one of the things we haven't focused on is, what does this mean when the ANC loses Tshwane, for example? Musima Amane had a rally on Tuesday, on Women's Day,
yes,
in which he said, if you agree with us, I'm quoting him directly, if you agree with us that jobs are not for mutual, that means that jobs are not for friends, then you can be in coalition with us. So think about what's happening today in the city of Tshwane. Now, I know a lot of people who work with, get tenders from the city of Tshwane. Essentially, you're saying, I think the budget is about 40 billion. I don't have the number off the top of my head, but I think the Tshwane budget is It's a massive, massive budget. And suddenly there are hundreds, tens of people, thousands of people who depended on patronage, on the fact that they know so-and-so, and so-and-so knows so-and-so, and so they will get a job because they know so-and-so. Suddenly their jobs are in jeopardy. Suddenly their source of bread is in jeopardy. And so what is happening right now in Tshwane, in the Nelson Mandela Bay, is quite a tsunami. And I'll tell you now, the ANC in Tshwane is desperate to do a deal with Julius Malema and the EFF, just so that many of those people can stay employed, can stay, can continue to tap into some of their wealth that they've enjoyed.
Justice, surely the EFF and Julius in particular are not keen to have ANC cadres continue to benefit from a patronage system. Surely they would stand against that, and this coalition wouldn't last terribly long if that did happen?
They wouldn't stand against it, but let's say one of them gets the speaker's position, one or two of them get MMC positions. The problem with being in a government of that nature is that you are now also part of the, shall we say, the enrichment network. And you also begin to look at, and this is a big danger for many of these coalitions, the junior coalition partners, is that you start to look, you start to feel, you start to sound like the guy who is top-notch. So it becomes very difficult to leave. And it would be, for the EFF, this is a dangerous, dangerous time, because if you go as the EFF with an ANC, which is so dominant, which can still use patronage in many, many instances, then your people can start saying, oh, it's nice and cozy and warm here.
Yeah.
And I'm going to stay. If you go with the DA, you've got to realize that the DA is a center, social democratic, center-right-ish party that essentially everything that it does is against what the EFF does. The EFF wants a socialist outcome. The DA wants me and you to own private business and be capitalists and make cash. That is diametrically opposed. So wherever they go, I think the EFF is going to find itself having to prepare for 5 years of very careful 5 years of very careful negotiation. And quite frankly, I think the EFF might die either way. And so I don't think the EFF can be a partner that can be trusted.
In other words, they're going to compromise so much that in the end they'll become the junior partner in a marriage of convenience.
Yeah, and then they'll get, you know, whichever way cuts this thing, I think down the line, we're going to have a collapse of these coalitions, and that may trigger new elections in these municipalities. And so, when you ask the question about are we a bit clearer about what's going on and who's doing what, I think one of the things we have to talk about is the fact that the ANC's take of the vote is the one that collapsed. So the guys who look at these numbers, people like Paul Berkowitz and the other guy, Scholz, point out that there's 3.3 million people who voted ANC in 2014 who now decided, I'm sitting at home and I'm going nowhere. And those 3.3 million can either be grabbed by the opposition, or the ANC can say, we are sorry, we let you down, but come back to us. And so if you trigger a new election in some of these municipalities that are hung, all 27 of them, you are in danger of letting loose those 3.3 million people that the ANC has disappointed.
Right.
And energizing them, if the ANC can energize them to come back home.
Justice,
so the ANC still has massive opportunity here.
There's a conspiracy theory that the DA and the ANC both want the EFF out of mainstream politics, right? And that's probably not that's not the conspiracy part. The conspiracy part is that perhaps for South Africa, the most interesting coalitions could be ANC and DA. And even though they're talking about not getting together, that would be the way to force the EFF out of the equation and to diminish that party's importance. If the ANC and the DA had to collaborate in municipalities, even outside of the metros, there could be ways for them to squeeze the EFF into complete non-existence.
Yeah, I don't think it's a conspiracy theory, and I'll tell you where the conspiracy implodes. The thing about the ANC and the DA is that of the parties that are talking now, they are the closest ideologically. And yeah. So their closeness, it's just at the heart of the thing is that the ANC has sort of been iffy about service delivery. And it's been iffy about its leader, who a lot of people criticize. So the key for me is, if the ANC, says, the key for me is that, in fact, these coalition talks would be most comfortable right now because the DA and the ANC are closer. And then you would have a proper left-right weighting in our politics. So you have the EFF on the left,
uh-huh.
And on the center-right, you have the ANC-DA. And
right.
If you were to ask me what I foresee for our politics down the line in 15, 20 years, I think there will be a coalition, and that coalition will be ANC-DA, because I think those two are, as Helen Ziller once said, that the EFF and the DA and the ANC are two sides of the same corrupt coin. She might be right about the corruption, but actually the DA and the ANC are the same side, are the two sides of the same ideological coin.
Yeah, that's very interesting.
And so... I don't think it's a conspiracy to kill off the EFF. I think it's just almost the natural order of things.
The
DA now feels such antipathy towards the ANC that it makes a coalition between the two impossible.
Justice, the other thing that's interesting is that the president is actually in a quite important and powerful position now, with the Gauteng ANC doing so badly in these elections, because he can turn this on its side and blame them. He can blame the leadership of Gauteng in the ANC, who have been opposed to him from Mangaung, who supported Kgalema Motlanthe. They were the only provincial executive to actually stand up to the general flow of the tide at that time. And he could use this to his advantage to eliminate opposition in the province of Gauteng, put his own people in charge. Whereas the Gauteng ANC may actually find themselves in a position where they want to cozy up to either the EFF, as you've already indicated the last time we spoke, or even to the DA, which people aren't talking about.
Yeah. President Zuma is... The narrative, if you speak to leaders of the ANC in, say, Mpumalanga or in the Northwest, they'll tell you, we are all to blame. We are all to blame. There's no... or Jacob Zuma is to blame, or Gauteng is to blame. They're saying, we are all to blame. So if we have to do something, we must all do something. Now ask yourself, who are these guys who are saying we are all to blame? Most of them is where Jacob Zuma supports it today.
Right.
And so you're absolutely right. That meeting, many people on the outside of the ANC, on the outside of the NEC, are going into that meeting saying, oh, you know what? It's time for Jacob Zuma to reflect and maybe fall on his sword. Quite frankly, I don't think that's the discussion. The minute this thing starts, the debate starts in that NEC.
Sorry, that was just the president laughing.
The minute that NEC starts, it will be exactly like the NEC.
Exactly.
It will be exactly like the NEC after the Constitutional Court judgment, in mm-hmm. which people stood up and said, but he said he's serious and he's prepared to pay, and he'll pay. So what's the problem there?
Just to move on to something else, because we're probably going to have many more discussions around the coalition, the state of the ANC internally, but yeah. I'm quite interested in your thoughts on the public protector hearings, which are taking place today. Not hearings, it's almost like auditions. They're interviewing people for this role. We've got Kevin Malunga, who's the deputy public protector at the moment. We've got Willy Hofmeyr. We've got Judge Desai. A couple of others, some well-known names, some less well-known names. Do you have any thoughts on this position and how objective the choice is going to be?
You know, the big debate in the run-up to this was all about how do we make sure that this doesn't become a choice by the 11-member committee. And that it becomes a choice by the people of South Africa, that many, all of us, get to have a bit of a say in this thing. So I'm firstly, the fact that the interview starts in about 20 minutes at 7:45 and will end at 11 p.m. means that actually, many of us won't participate at all. We'll be so exhausted. It's one after the other, boom, boom, boom. And the reasoning for it is that they don't want Gareth Cliff to have heard what Justice Malala said today and come back and try to outsmart it, which I think is a lousy reason all around.
Huh.
So I don't think let's take who's on that panel. Let's take Julius Malema or Glynis Breitenbach, who are the two opposition, main opposition people on that panel. You know, I mean, are they going to listen to every candidate throughout the day and straight through until 11 p.m.? And if things go all right, maybe well into 12, 1, 2 a.m. tomorrow? I just think the way it's structured is it's not conducive to what we've been talking about. I'm quite a fan of Kevin Malunga, the deputy, and I think that he's got a fair chance. It'll be interesting how his interview goes, but I think the guy has got a lot of good things going for him. Hofmeyr, Desai, all of them experienced people who come from a progressive background. All of them have bits and pieces of bluff against them. And these are the ones that must be ventilated in the interviews. So that's why I worry that the quality of interview. If Siraj Desai comes on at 10 p.m.
Yep.
and all those 11 MPs are exhausted and tired and they've been asking people questions all day. Quite frankly, I don't know about the quality of that interview and how it's going to turn out.
Right.
So I'm just a little bit worried about the way things are being done with these interviews. So we'll see how it goes, but I just think this day should have been broken into 3 days where everyone gets a proper chance. I don't know if you've seen Julius Malema at the Judicial Services Commission when they interview judges.
He's very
fantastic.
Yeah, he's very hardcore. He does a very thorough examination of these people's prejudices and their connections to everybody.
Exactly.
He doesn't take any prisoners. In fact, I mentioned that in my last interview with him, and he just started laughing because he said it's very important that we have judges, and I can imagine with the public protector it's even more important, who are not connected to these networks of patronage.
Exactly. Now, if you're not going to give enough people enough time to reflect, to answer, and so forth in these interviews, I think that ideal that all of us were hoping to see of getting a public protector who's as good as or better than Chilima Donsela, then you know we are compromising that thing. So I really think there needs to be a big, big reflection on whether today's process is actually the right one. And I hope, and I know Makosi Kosa, the chair of that committee, in my view, she should sit down with all of them and say, guys, we are doing ourselves a disservice here. Let's rethink this whole thing, because it's not working, and I don't think it's going to work as it is structured.
Justice, one last question about ANC internecine politics, which I know we keep bouncing back and forth from. How is the Premier League faring? Are these three gentlemen, David Mabuza and Supramo Mopelo and Ace Magashule, are these three still in the pound seats when it comes to choosing a successor for the president?
They're still in the pound seats. Look at Mpumalanga and the elections you've just had.
Yeah.
Not a single council has been taken away from the ANC, but there has been a loss in support. It's gone down, but not a single seat gone. So he's feeling very enthused at the moment. In the Free State, only Metimahulu, I think, has been lost. Other than that, all councils are secure.
Sure.
The one who didn't do too well, but still is ahead, is Supra Mahuma Bello, where the EFF in the mining areas did okay, where the DA has grown a little bit, but still very much in charge of the Northwest. Now there's an extra person on that list of the Premier League, and that's Willis Nkunu, who's the Premier of KwaZulu-Natal and the deputy of the chair, Sifiso Sigalala, in KwaZulu-Natal. Now, in terms of these past elections, the IFP has come back and regained some of the ground it lost to the NFP. But the ANC remains essentially in charge in most places, except in Kandla and parts of the north of KwaZulu-Natal. So you know, it's actually more powerful. So the candidates who can get the block in the ANC to be behind them will in my view be the winner at the conference next year. It's been interesting for me that the head of the African Union was a DJ on Power FM on Women's Day.
Yes.
On the day before that, and she also gave speeches at the Women's Day celebrations. And I think I haven't looked at her diary closely, but she seems to be in South Africa a lot.
Yeah.
The head of the AU. And the AU has lots of problems with an election in Zambia today. Will she go to that country and also, you know, do a few things here and there? I wonder. But I think essentially she's in the country because she's running. And if you ask me, while Cyril Ramaphosa and Jacob Zuma were dozing off on the stage on Women's Day, she was criticizing them full on. She said, I wonder where we are going.
Hmm.
So I think there's a real election going on, and she's working hard to make sure that thing supports her at the conference.
Let's just imagine a fantasy scenario for a moment. There are, again, conspiracy theories abounding, but let's imagine that somehow an exit strategy for the president has been worked out, and that it was just a question of the elections and making it through the elections, because without him, they would have probably done even worse in these elections without a leader. So let's imagine that the exit strategy is that the president will retire to Nkandla sometime in the next couple of days, and he will surprise the whole nation by announcing that he's decided to go quietly, and that whoever his successor is has made some kind of Nixon pact with him. You know, Nixon and Ford, where Ford pardoned Nixon and everything was kind of forgiven and he disappeared into the hinterland. And let's imagine then that Cyril Ramaphosa becomes the president somewhere in the next few days, and that he is then the president until 2019, giving him ample time to secure that position for himself. And in the light of that, that he could destabilize certain power structures within the ANC that would stand against him. Is there any possibility that then Cyril's chances are supreme in the ANC and that the others will all fade, as opposed to the scenario that we're looking at now, which is that the president remains in office until 2019 and those in his faction are the ones who become ascendant?
Yeah, it's possible. We have 16 months to go to the ANC conference next year. In that 16 months, if Cyril gets to become the president of the republic, then the race towards that state begins to be more fulsome towards him, more interesting. And so people start to look at him and say, maybe he should just stay on instead of having a new ANC president who will come in and then we're going to run with that president and Cyril's going to be stepping down from the presidency after that. Or he could become the Ford-Nixon deal guy that does the pardon and all that. And then immediately afterwards, the ANC does to him what it did to Thabo Mbeki, and essentially to say, we've got an ANC president, and this is costing it 2 centers of power, so we're going to get rid of you and put our real candidate into place so that when they campaign for 2019, they're already in place and people know who they are and how they can change. Darius, I want to take a bet with you and Ben and Mabale. Jacob Zuma is not going to be the scenario, the conspiracy scenario that he claimed. My view is that it's not going to happen because it's not going to go past the National Executive Committee of the ANC. That National Executive Committee has 86 members plus 14 members from the provinces. So every chairperson and secretary of all the provinces. So that's about 110 people in that room this weekend. Yeah?
Yeah.
Of those people, when I do my count, when I take the list of 86 and put it next to the list of about 17 others, I'm telling you right now, Jacob Zuma has about 60% support, and the support says Jacob Zuma is not to blame for this. We can reflect, we can do this, but Jacob Zuma says. And so I don't think a deal is going to be done. Jacob Zuma himself wants to stay on, and I'll tell you why he wants to stay on. He wants to stay on to make sure that SAA is not restructured by the finance minister. He wants to stay on to make sure that the nuclear procurement deal comes through before he leaves office. Those are the two key issues for Jacob Zuma, and I don't think he's going away. So if you guys are happy, I'd like to take this 300 rand and put it on the table, and you guys take 100 rand each.
Right.
I will pay you real money because in December next year, Jacob Zuma will still be in office.
All right.
That could be wrong.
Okay.
But that's my bet.
Well, let's see what happens. I'm happy to take that bet. It's on. Thank you, Justice.
I see Ben and Mabale are quiet.
Yeah, they don't want.
No. I'm just waiting for the terms, Justice. What are the terms for the winner or the loser?
You give me 100 rand when I lose. When we go, we're gonna do a live broadcast from the ANC conference in December next year.
All right.
And you guys are going to give me $100 each. Plus, you're buying me lunch.
All right. Deal. Okay. Deal done. Let's take this bet. All right, Justice. Thank you so much, Justice Malala, and the Burning Platform.
Cheers, guys.
Always good to talk to you. And we'll check in with him again next Thursday between 7. And about 7:30, 8 o'clock, depending on how much there is to talk about. And there's always a lot to talk about, so we have to watch the time. Otherwise, you run on, Ben, and there's no time for anything else.
It's just fascinating how this coalition government stuff is just going to shake up everything.
And all these theories that are starting to surface about what's going to happen to who, where, when, why. I mean, it's fascinating. But we are in an interesting time and place in our country's history. There's absolutely no doubt that the stakes are as high as they've ever been. We're just going to keep an eye on this. And Justice helps us to figure out exactly where it's all going. He says by December next year, Zuma's still our president.
Yes, he will still be the...
So you agree?
Well, you know me, eternal pessimist.
Okay, but then we've taken a bet against that position, so...
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm not going to change now, but...
All right, let's see what happens. Thank you, Justice and Nando's, for bringing us the Burning Platform every Thursday.
Burning Platform, fired up by Nando's on cliffcentral.com.
You know what? I'm feeling good. I'll tell you why.
Tell us why.
Because I think I've beaten this cold. I think it's on the recession. I think I've managed to smack this cold into home base. By tomorrow, I'll be bright as rain. Watch. Justy, what are you laughing at, Bashida? It's true.
I just remembered something yesterday.
What?
Jane went shopping with you, right, for groceries. Mm-hmm. And she says you were just coughing up in the whole car. You're just giving her germs, just coughing.
Yeah, I went, this is the glamorous life of running your own business. Jane comes to me, she says to me, we need milk, we need toilet paper, we need tea bags, a lot of boring bullshit. So I said to her, well, you know, here's the card.
Yeah.
She goes, she looks at me, she goes, huh, Darren, I can't go to the shops without a car. So I'm like, oh, now I have to give you my car as well. And then I realized what she meant is she fills a whole trolley. I mean, it's a whole trolley. Do you know how much people shit around here? Do you have any idea of how much loo paper we go through? These are things that I do not want to think about.
Oh, yes.
So I said to Jane, all right, fine. Let's go. I'll go with you. So we haven't been shopping before, the two of us. So Jane is very efficient. But the point with Jane is that she's a stickler. Like, there was a certain kind of milk she wanted to buy that cost... R68.70, okay?
Okay,
for a pack of six.
Yeah,
but they didn't have that milk on the shelves.
Yeah,
they had a R78.70 pack.
Yeah.
So R10 more.
Yes.
So guess what Jane says? She goes, nope, we are waiting here until they bring the R68 one.
Oh my goodness.
Jane, we don't have time. She goes, I'm gonna wait. We waited 7 minutes. Eventually I said to her, look, I'm not standing in this corridor waiting for the R68 milk. Just buy the R78 milk and we'll make it up in the long run.
Yeah.
She's like, I don't like this at all. She was not happy.
It was funny when you said, Jane, I'll go with you shopping.
Yeah.
As soon as you walked out, she quickly started asking everyone else if they could rather instead. She did not want to go with you shopping.
Yeah. No one wants to go shopping with me because I'm horrible to shop with.
And then Dory was like, don't worry, Jane, he's the boss. He's going to buy you lunch. Ask him for some lunch. He will get you lunch.
You were asking for lollipops. I bought nobody anything. I'm horrible.
I know,
boss.
Right? No lollipops. Horrible.
No, nothing. Poor Jane. And then we schlep all the stuff back to the car. And we get back here and we start unpacking it and everything. And there's just this heap of boring stuff that we had to buy dishwashing liquid and milk and ugh.
I like to do shopping like a mission. You make a list of your targets.
Yeah.
You go in, you assassinate, you go out.
Right.
But do you also put yourself on a time?
Yes. Yes.
Like you say, I have to do this in under 8
minutes.
Well,
the quicker you get it done, the better you feel. Shopping's a big waste of time. If I could order my clothes online and make sure they fit, I'd do that. But I'm too scared to order clothes online. I'll order shoes online, but clothes, no.
Yeah, soon you'll be able to virtually put the clothes on.
That would be cool.
Yeah, I'll have ways of you to do it. And it'll change shopping forever. Right, Mubs?
We hope so. Shopping is kind of a waste of time, Flex, you're right.
Yeah, you're one of the few women who feels
way. I hate shopping.
A lot of girls who love, 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 love some shopping. All right, let's get on with it. We've got things to talk about and places to go and people to see this morning.
Okay, do you want me to give you an update on that mystery murder of the wife of the CEO?
Yeah, please.
Who died at the Speer Wine Estate?
Yeah, okay. Let's hear.
So, Susan Roger is her name.
Yeah.
And her husband, Jason, allegedly fought at a hotel bar Uh-oh. On the night that she mysteriously died, all right? But Jason's legal representatives say that...
Oh, he's got his legal representatives involved.
He needs to, because yeah. remember they ruled her death a suicide, and then last week, spokesperson Captain F.C. Van Wyk said that an inquest docket had been opened and the investigation changed to murder. So this guy definitely had to lawyer up. Nice. Oh boy. So the argument was about ending the night and returning to their room to go to sleep. And she said that everyone had had enough to drink. This is according to Jason's lawyer.
Yeah.
Jason is the CEO of Lou Geffen Sotheby's International. The company was hosting a function for the staff at the Spear Wine Estate in Stellenbosch last month. Now, it had been reported that Susan confronted her husband at the bar about an affair that he had had, oh. which his lawyers are saying, no, there was no affair. It's an allegation. She just wanted them to wrap it up for the night because she'd said that he'd had enough to drink. But this report is saying, no, she was arguing with him because of an alleged affair. Mm-hmm. He said after she had told her husband to stop drinking, they retired to their room. Her body was found in the bathroom the following morning on the 24th of July. Jason allegedly raised the alarm when he could not open the bathroom door. A hotel employee managed to open the door, and that is when they found the 47-year-old mother of three hanging with the cord of a hair... she wasn't hanging. But she was reportedly found with the cord of a hair straightener around her neck.
Ugh, what an unglamorous way to die.
Initially ruled a suicide, but then last week investigators said, no, something looks fishy here. Uh-huh. It's now murder. I mean, I don't know if Jason has officially been charged yet because I haven't picked up on any of those reports. But you have to assume that the police are looking at him to be suspect number one, right? Because if it is murder, which is what they're saying it is, he was the only other person in that hotel room with her the night before she died.
Exactly. And what have we always learned? In the case of murder, go to the spouse first.
Exactly. Flex?
It seems to be the thing.
So take a look at the apparatus for death. The hair straightener and the cord.
Yeah.
First of all, you can't hang yourself because that will break. And strangling yourself, won't you give up like halfway and... sort of, you can't hold it there when you start losing breath and that. So wouldn't someone have to have killed you?
No,
I'm kind of with Michael. It's quite difficult to strangle yourself.
Yeah.
And you can't hang yourself on that cord.
Because you'd lose consciousness before you die, I think. So you wouldn't be able to actually follow through to the actual bitter end.
Oh, I see. Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah.
Hmm. So in other words, it's pretty much impossible unless you're going to hang yourself. Where it's gravity does the work.
Yeah, that cord would snap on its own.
Right.
And Michael knows what a hair straightener is too. So I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean you use one of those.
So it's a bit fishy.
It's very fishy.
We've got to investigate these. We add this to our file. We've got the Henry van Bredaar case.
Crimes of Passion Watchdogs. Right? Yeah.
We've got the Hope Zindersun case. We've got this one. We're going to keep a file, and then of course the PE the teacher.
Oh, that Paniyatou.
Jade Paniyatou.
Paniyatakakis.
Well, the husband is officially being charged there, right?
Right.
Like, he's the one facing the crime.
Yeah, but he got other people to do it.
Yes.
Couldn't even do it himself.
And then there was the Molly Molly Monster.
Yeah, well, that's a long time ago, Ben. The Molly Molly Monster. That was a hell of a story. God, that was a story, eh? Do you remember that one?
I don't remember the details.
Oh, what a horrible story.
Crimes of Passion. You've got to know who you're going to bed with at night.
This man basically employed a whole bunch of farm workers to like rape and mutilate his wife in front of him. It was just horrendous.
In South Africa?
Yeah, the Molly Molly Monster.
When was this?
Oh, 5 years ago.
Yes, sis.
Yeah, I'm guessing 4 or 5 years ago, somewhere around there. But what a horrible story. So, you know what, people? Let's all just stop killing each other, can we? If you don't mind, and especially these interfamily, you see all of these, every one of these stories, it's the husband of the wife, or it's the mom of the dad, or the aunt of the uncle, or
the son,
or the, it's family. So it's not as if ordinary South Africans are walking around murdering each other. This is people you know.
Mm.
You should be more afraid of the people you know than of the people that you don't.
Isn't that a scary truth?
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's also got to do with the people you know. Wouldn't they have easier access to kill you?
Sure, but Flax, they have more motive as well.
Yeah, and like fits of rage.
Yeah, passion. Crime's a passion. That's what Mums and Ben are saying.
I don't want to speculate with the story, but I think...
We're about to speculate.
I'm about to speculate. So they start having a fight over the whole cheating scandal.
Allegedly.
Allegedly. Mm. They go back to the room. She starts saying how she's going to go confront the woman, and he starts getting scared that now it's going to ruin what him and that woman had and all the love and the sex they were having and things like that. And that makes him angry and scared, and then he takes it out on her.
Yeah. That's, it's a possible theory.
Mm.
Any of these theories must be examined at this point. We don't know the details. We weren't there. And this is the problem with any of these stories. We learned this in Oscar Pistorius' case too. You aren't there, you don't know. That's all there is to say about it. All right, what else is there to talk about this morning? There's so much.
Well, if you want to get more about the whole Tinder in the Olympic Village,
yeah.
So go onto Instagram. There's actually an account called Sports Swipe.
Yes.
So SPORTSSWIPE. Sports Swipe, and you'll see all the bit. This is so brilliant.
So they actually have the screenshots?
So they're actually taking screenshots of all the athletes who are on Tinder who are getting stuck in here.
Oh, that's great. On Instagram.
Absolute gold. Yeah, Sports Swipe.
I'm looking for it right now. This is going to be good. So who have we got, Ben?
Tinder athletes, all images found on Tinder/Bumble, providing alternative coverage of Rio 26. This is what it says in the bio.
Okay, so we've got... oh, wow.
I mean, some of the pictures are quite something. This one dude's just showing massive six-pack.
Yeah, I see that. Look at that. Sure.
So this all goes into the whole unofficial group sex thing.
There's one very hot athlete called Marcia, who's 30 years old. She's obviously from Holland.
And Marcia's probably been training for 4 years. Sure. So she's gugging for it, as they say in Scotland.
Cassidy from Stanford University, 21 years old, from the Maria Lenk Aquatic Center. She's a 2016 Olympic diver Team USA. She's looking good. And she is available on Sports Swipe. Isn't that nice? Here's another one. This is hot. Simone, also from Stanford. Stanford looks like it's 6 Central. Here's a swimmer. Ryan, 31, from the University of Florida. He's up for action. If anyone's in Rio right now and you need a quick dose of some hot loving, then these are the people to look at.
Jeez, can you just imagine, like, your coach going, okay, get off Tinder. We actually need to go and perform now.
Well, imagine even more of a disturbing situation. Your coach is on Tinder too.
Yeah, that's kind of awkward.
Mabs, here is an Italian rower called Giuseppe, who's 23. He's looking for you.
No, well, you see, here's my thing, though, is, I mean, would these athletes even consider us? Because, you know, they're kind of...
Not right now, but maybe in 2 weeks' time.
Prime physique and all of that. You know, they'd look at us and think, oh, no, not that fat one.
Yeah.
I want the gymnast.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Oh, here we go. Here's a South African. This is called... there's a South African dude from Potchefstroom, apparently, in the running here. Huh.
I wonder if, like... Can you imagine you get to the Olympics and you really have not ever actually interacted with other humans in a physical sense and you get onto Tinder? This must be mind-blowing, like absolutely mind-blowing.
Yeah.
It must be like showing Facebook to like a Syrian. Like it just must be crazy.
Yeah, those Syrians, shame. They don't even have that, let alone Tinder. All right, we will take your calls, 0861-555-189. And you can also get hold of us on Twitter at cliffcentral.com or directly from the app.
Don't a lot of the coaches like ban sex for their players during the Olympics so they don't throw them off their game and stuff?
Yeah, there is that. When we had Cameron van der Bergen here 2 years ago, he was saying that basically, you know, who's people who have finished their events, they're the ones walking around the village. The ones that are still involved, they're the ones in the rooms.
Right, that's
so
it.
It's very much like you can see who has no more requirements. And
but it's true that also sometimes the... certain events obviously finish and those athletes are still there until the end.
No, you have like a time. So once your event finishes, you've probably got like 2 days, not even.
So those are your two.
You go check out.
And those are your 2 days to get action.
You can't just chill. It's not like spring break. You know, you don't just go there, do a
and
spot
hang around.
Exercise
yeah.
and hang
I got
around.
You. All right. Very nice. Isn't that great? My pussy good, pussy sweet. Yes, Flax.
I saw someone post a photo. There's a dude whose job it is to walk around the Olympics with a massive bag of condoms around his like neck, and he just hands them out.
Right.
Like a massive thing. There must have been like 30,000 condoms in this thing.
For real?
That's legit.
Huh. It's his job.
Wow.
Listen, we should all be practicing safe sex anyway, but especially with Zika.
Yeah.
Like that, they definitely need to be using condoms.
They're absolutely right.
I wanted to know, how much does each South African that wins a medal get? Like, how much do they get for a silver medal? How much do they get for a gold medal?
I'm actually really not sure, Michael. I don't think...
I heard it's in the figures of like 250,000 for gold.
I don't know that there's a payout.
No, there is. There's definitely a
payout.
Are
you sure?
100% no, there's a payout.
I thought you get the medal and, you know, you get the naches and that's enough.
I think our sports government or something like that.
Sports government.
Yeah, pays you out.
Yeah, there's country incentives. But I mean, like, obviously some countries have money and some countries steal the money. I'm not telling you which one our one falls into, but let's just say that Michael Phelps will get more for gold than, say, Chad Leclerc will get for a gold.
Yeah, that's true. Uh-huh. That's just the way of the world.
All right. It's fun to watch the Olympics. I told you I spent most of the public holiday, Women's Day, watching the swimming, and that was exciting. I watched a bunch of different events.
Sorry, guys. I actually got it here.
Yeah.
So China, if you win a gold for China, they really appreciate that. So they'll give you $31,400.
Nice.
When you're an American and you win a gold medal, they give you $25,000.
That's not so great.
So there's massive cash incentives. Some countries just go, well, you got a medal. Good for you.
You got a medal. Like Belarus. They're not going to exactly dole out the treasury, you know?
But if you are an Olympic athlete in Azerbaijan, jeez, you get $510,000 if you go win a gold.
What?
Wow. Yeah,
okay, but I mean, what are the chances?
I mean, like for some countries, this means a hell of a lot.
All right.
Like, Qatar tried to buy Roland Schumann like a long time ago. They actually wanted to buy him so that he could go to the Olympics and win a medal. It's one big cock contest.
Qatar.
Yeah. Okay, so Malaysia, this is the list, right? Malaysia, they'll give you a solid gold bar worth $600,000 if you win a gold medal.
Why don't they just give me the 600K?
Well, yeah.
Well, you could just take your gold bar and sell it, Mavs. I would rather take the gold bar.
So if
you
win gold, Malaysia's the country to do it. Second,
hell yes.
Azerbaijan will give you 510. Kazakhstan will give you 250,000. Thailand will give you 314,000 over a 20-year period.
So, how much?
They'll give you 314,000 over a 20-year period.
Oh, so
hey,
they know
it's a payment plan. How?
Yeah, because they know. They clearly know that their athletes will blow it all in the first week. That's great. But it turns out that the third world countries are the ones you want to be running and jumping and swimming
for. United Kingdom, zero. They'll give you zero and you'll like it. Australia will give you 126,000 for a gold.
Wow. But the Americans are super cheap, huh? Only 25 grand.
25 grand, yeah. China, 31,400. Yeah, France will give you 65,000. Tajikistan will give you 63,000 if you win a gold medal for their country.
Well, that's just enough to keep you in the country.
Yeah, but you see, to me, I'm not surprised. The USA, for example, what are they, number one or two on the medals board?
Yeah, so they would have to hand
so
out.
So they're going to be paying out a lot more money than Azerbaijan. And Azerbaijan knows that they're not getting any gold.
Yeah, exactly.
So they're not
worried. We give you 500 million. And every athlete's falling over themselves to win. And they go, 500 million, but you are lose. So you get nothing.
Kyrgyzstan, they'll give you $200,000.
Oh, yeah. But how many Kyrgyzstanis have won?
I don't think there has been one yet, Gareth. Uzbekistan, 150,000.
Yeah.
Yeah. Look, some countries just give for gold. They don't care about your silver and bronze schmutz here.
Yeah.
It's gold or nothing.
Yeah. No, it's madness.
Well, I have the figures for South Africa.
Yes.
If you win... Okay, let's start with bronze.
Ben just gave us the figures.
For South Africa.
Oh, no. Okay, go.
Okay, so if you win bronze in South Africa, you'll get 100,000 rand and your coach will get 80,000 rand.
Okay.
If you win silver, you'll get 250,000 rand and your coach will get 50,000 rand.
How is the coach getting less for having won silver than they do for bronze?
Because they didn't train you hard enough. If they trained you harder, they would have got gold. Makes perfect sense to me. Fucking losers.
Carry on.
And for gold, you will get 500,000 rand. And your coach will get 100,000 rand.
Sweet.
This is according to Sascock.
Sascock.
And then how much it gets taxed?
By 500 out of the 500,000 rand.
And how long do you have to wait to get paid?
Yeah.
By the way, anything from Minister of Razzmatazz about the Olympics, or is he still busy talking about the ANC?
I don't follow him. I'll look up on that feed tomorrow. Right. The value of a gold medal in this Olympics? The medal itself?
We know it's made of silver and it's covered in a thin film of gold, like those chocolates that you buy at the supermarket that look like Krugerrands.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. What's the value of silver at the moment? Tell me, Ben.
Well, the gold medal is worth $600 in actual, as an entity.
Okay.
1% actual gold, 92.5% silver, 6.16% copper. A silver is worth $325, just slightly more copper. And then the bronze is worth $3. It would cost $3 to make a bronze medal.
It's not even worth going.
97% copper, 2.5% zinc.
If that person who's in the third place platform and when they do the crowning and the medal ceremony.
You're getting a $3 medal.
They should just sit down and be disrespectful. I mean, for $3.
0.5% of your $3 medal, it comes from tin.
That's embarrassing.
And all these medals come from recycled parts. So, I mean, if there's been cars left alone in the favelas, they're probably going to your silver medal.
Yeah.
All right, fascinating. This is stuff about the Olympics we did not know. Anything else from you, Mubs?
Gareth, just that we are apparently going to get brand new number plates as of 2017.
I just saw a story that said that's nonsense. But okay, let's just suspend disbelief for a moment.
Okay, this is according to reports by the Department of Transport, which is not it's not a new thing. Because
but the Department of Transport is also the one saying it's not going to happen.
Okay, this is okay. Then never mind. Then I don't know what to say.
Go on.
No, I'm done.
No, let me hear what your Department of Transport person says. We'll compare it with what my Department of Transport person says and we'll see who's right.
Well, they've started having these conversations back in 2015 already about how we'll get brand new number plates, and now that conversation has resurfaced. I don't know why we need new number plates if we do, really. Just that the new plates will display the South African flag on the top left corner, the license number and license mark of the province, as well as the name of the province under the SA flag. The letters and figures are set to be displayed in the following colors: black for public transport vehicles, blue for general vehicles and personalized number plates, red for government vehicles, and green for diplomatic vehicles.
Huh. All right, well, let me tell you my story, because they actually showed us an example of what this might look like.
Yeah.
And then in with my source, my buddy.
Yeah, okay, no, let's compare sources.
Just find the story. Oy vey. No, I can't find it, so I'm already discredited. I'll find it now. My source says that there are no new number plates coming. That's nonsense. But you know what? You've often been right and I've been wrong. So here it is, okay? Number plate changes a hoax, says department.
Okay.
Independent Online is my source. Who's yours?
I have been redirected to www.gov.za, where the Department of Transport issued a general notice back in 2015, saying that we need to prepare ourselves for new number plates. So I don't know.
The Department of Transport has not made a determination, published any notice, or issued a public statement regarding the so-called new number plates. According to the Government Gazette doing the rounds on the internet last week, the new number plates will be introduced in 2017. However, departmental spokesperson Ishmael Mnisi distanced the department from the notice, saying the department did not plan to replace the number plates with a standard design. So,
okay.
There goes that theory.
All right.
All right, when we come back in a moment too, we're going to talk about what you can register, what you can't. Patents, trademarks, all the things that people own. There are huge fights going on. It's actually a fascinating area of the law, because we often think about these people who make hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars off an invention or a patent or some kind of registered trademark that they managed to get early on. Let's say you come up with some great innovation and you manage to patent that design. You could end up seriously in the money, or if someone else steals it from you before you can register it, you'll end up with no money and they'll end up with everything.
You know, one of the greatest things that was never patented was Lil Wayne came up with the word bling bling.
Stop right there. Thank you.
And they estimate he would be worth billions by now.
All right. Very good. Thank you, Flash. CliffCentral.com.